This is ESPN 1000, WMVP, WSHE, HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Now, back to more Waddle and Sylvie, live from the Old National Bank State Street Studio.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Excited as a Bears fan for the season to start. We're always excited for football. Be at Binney's Beverage Depot on Friday with Miller Lite, giving away those opening day tickets against the Niners in the Miller Lite Loft. You know, I believe, and I've said this for the last several months, when they went to Polian, like the caller said, and they hired Eberflus and they hired Poles. Now they're going to hire a new team president. They're going to build a new stadium out in Arlington Heights. I don't remember a more important time. I mean, when Halas called Ditka up, you know, Jim Finks was a super important hire. He built what eventually would be the 85 Super Bowl championship team. From the ground up, you draft and develop. And then they hired Ditka to coach that team. Buddy Ryan, one of the best defensive coordinators of all time. Big moments in time. I said another comp to me is when Ricketts bought the Cubs. Ricketts decided a new way of doing business by going to Theo Epstein and by rebuilding Wrigley Field and not just patchworking it with some netting where the concrete would fall onto. They made Wrigley Field a viable place for the next 50 years. Pep Boyle texted our group. He had a really good one, too. And they all have something in common. He mentioned, like, when old man Wirtz dies, were you going to say this, Mellor,
too? I was thinking it. I wanted to actually give callers an opportunity to potentially bring it up, but I was thinking the same thing.
So old man Wirtz dies, and Rocky takes over, and it was a surprise. Everyone thought it was going to be Peter Wirtz. He was more affiliated with the team. Rocky was more affiliated with the liquor business. Peter didn't take over the team. It was Rocky. Rocky then goes out and he hires the team president in John McDonough. And there's a new way of doing business. They start broadcasting games on television, home games. They start becoming more fan friendly. They build that team from the bottom up, all the years in the making. Keith and Seabrook and Kane and Taves. And then they had Patrick Sharp, you know, one of the biggest free agent signings in Chicago sports history. Marian Hossa. We could go on and on and on. On how this was done. But think about that moment in time where you had a chance with a new owner, sort of a new owner, same family, but a change at the top and then a new way of doing business. What did it give Hawks fans? Gave Hawks fans three cups and the longest sustainable winning this franchise has seen since the 50s and 60s. And with the Cubs, it gave me... When they go to Theo and they rebuild Wrigley Field, it gave me the most sustainable winning product in Cubs history. I am not promising you or even suggesting that we are going to see the best era of Bears football. But I'm telling you it's a chance because there's a new way of doing business. There's never been all at once new stadium, new president, new general manager, new coach, second year quarterback. If they do business right, if they build this the right way this year, the foundation could be set for what the Blackhawks have done in recent time and what the Cubs have done in recent time. So that's what I'm selling you today.
Well,
we're upon it. The most important time in Chicago Bears history, at least in the modern era.
To the point about the Blackhawks and the way they were able to completely reimagine and kind of captivate, you know, not just the city of Chicago, but also the sport of hockey. What you have with it's very similar to what the Bears have an opportunity here with, because the Blackhawks, I would say, you know, you have, you know, the Canadian teams like Montreal, Toronto, but the Blackhawks really for that decade were the crown jewel of hockey. They were whatever they could, the outdoor classic, you know, they would shoehorn the Blackhawks into every opportunity because they knew the Blackhawks were going to go ahead and be box office. Everybody wanted to watch the Hawks, and the Bears have a similar opportunity here because look at the landscape of football. Outside, like the Cowboys are certainly America's team, but New York and L.A., they've got multiple teams, and they kind of fight for, you know, the population's interest in those cities. But in Chicago, you have the founding franchise of football here, and they get a lot of respect, but it is because of that history. It's not because of the winning they've done for the most part in recent times. If you can have yourself a winning franchise with a franchise quarterback like Justin Fields, but also if you can build yourself a potential paradise, like some, it doesn't have to be SoFi Stadium, but it can be. You can really become the Blackhawks of the NFL in some ways.
Well, think about it, too. The Blackhawks in hockey compared to the NFL and the Bears. Like, the Bears are already at a starting point. Everything that you said is true. Like, in recent, it's been 36-plus years since they've won a Super Bowl. In 55 Super Bowls, 56 Super Bowls, they've been to two. Two. Think about that. And they're still super popular. They're a crap team in a rebuild. And how many national games did they get this year? Three? Think about if they would take advantage of this. Think about if Fields is the real deal. Think about if Poles is the real deal. Think if they build a paradise and then they hire a business, a likable president who knows how to run a franchise where it could be. They already have a fan base that travels amongst the best in the NFL. They already are a ratings bonanza. If the Bears would finally enter a sustained winning period, and they've done it all, even in past years, when in 05 and 06 and in the 80s, they never had that sustained quarterback play. McMahon was always hurt. They didn't have, you know, Rex Grossman. Think about if you had a star quarterback with sustained winning in this town with where the Bears are. They've got a chance, if they do business right, to embark on the greatest time we've seen. Well, or they could be like the Bears and they could F it all up again.
They had 1 year of success where they fooled the national folks into thinking after Nagy's first year with Mitch Trubisky that they might have something. And I think they had six national TV games that year. They definitely had five and they might have been flexed into a six.
Sure, yes.
I mean, they will be on the marquee at every opportunity if they can just put together a little bit of success, because the Bears are the franchise outside of the Cowboys that the NFL loves to hoist up and lift up to the national media, national audience if they can.
We're in for Carmen and Yurko. Waddle is off today. I'll be back tomorrow. He went to Ohio for a funeral. Someone he grew up with lost a parent, and so he is away today. He'll be back tomorrow. 312-332-3776. Carmen and Yurko, we're on 10 to noon. They'll be back tomorrow at their normal time of now, and we'll be on 2 to 6 tomorrow. We've got White Sox baseball at 2:30. I mentioned this too, like simple stuff. Don't overthink the captains, who are like your four best, most respected players on the team. It's Justin Fields, Roquan Smith, Robert Quinn, and Cody Whitehair. You know, I mean, maybe he could bicker a little bit, but the offensive line is so important, and he's the one veteran on that team that's been here the longest.
Yeah, for sure.
In Whitehair. Robert Quinn just set the franchise record in sacks. Justin Fields is supposed to be your franchise quarterback. Roquan Smith is a guy who is the leader of your defense, the inside linebacker, and he's looking for his big payday. Like, to me, it just makes sense. You're not mixing around lockers and saying, get to know the defense, get to know the offense. You're not having, they have one rotating captain a week, which is kind of cool too. So that way you can honor a guy for having good years, but you also have the known leaders that you're putting C's on their chest. And it makes sense.
And because if you do rotating captains, you completely submarine whatever you're trying to accomplish with captains. It defeats the purpose of having captains if they're constantly shuffling. It would have been easy, too, I think, for Matt Eberflus to have named Eddie Jackson a captain. Now, whether or not
tackle to be a captain?
I'm happy they didn't, though.
Yeah, because lead by example.
I do think this is giving them, one more reason to go ahead and hey, Eddie, light a fire under your ass. Go play and play football. Earn your money. I don't think, at this point, that ship may have sailed. But I think it also would have been very easy to go to the guy who actually has played in Pro Bowls and said, you're our captain, whether or not he's earned it. I'm glad to see that, no, they're not going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I like who they named captain. Look, I know the glass is half full right now. I'm going into this. I'm hopeful that this is a new way of doing business, and this is a start of something special. I hope we all. Oh, that's all we can do at the beginning of stuff. You know, I lived through two years of hating my football team these last 2 years. I hated them last year. It was a hate watch. I nothing made sense. The Cleveland game. Nothing, and like you could put someone who's never watched the sport of football and say, draw me up a game plan, and it would make more sense than what Matt Nagy and his staff did last year for Justin Fields. Ryan Pace and some of his draft picks didn't make sense. The last 2 years, I hate it. So am I optimistic? Am I saying to you, yeah, it makes sense, the captains. Yeah, it makes sense, this rebuild. Yeah, it's cool to see Tevin Jenkins rebound from a tough start and be the starter now at guard. I get it. I'm selling some hope here, but I'm tired of hating my football team, and I'm excited to open up this year with a little bit of new hope and a little bit of vim and vigor for my football team against the Niners.
Do you remember the week of Thanksgiving last year with the Lions? I can't remember a more chaotic. It was a short week.
Oh, was that the
yes,
that was
the report.
That was patch.com, right?
Correct. Yes, the report that Matt Nagy had been informed he would not be back at the end of the season. Then George McCaskey had to go and talk to the team and reassure them that Matt Nagy had
pure
not been
chaos.
Fired.
Who's running the show there?
And then I remember Joe Buck and Troy Aikman on Thanksgiving, like, they could not get out of there quicker. They were so happy when the game winning field goal.
The final call from that game
was, yes, Joe Buck was like the disgust in his voice. He couldn't believe he was spending his holiday watching that.
I blacked a lot of it out because I was reading Weeder's column today, and he was going through some of the Fields injuries, and like I forgot Justin Fields had COVID and missed the final game. You know, I remember the rib injury against Baltimore. I forgot about the ankle injury too at the end, and then he just comes back, and then he gets COVID again. And now the second half of that season was a pure disaster. That's where, again, a new team president. Where if you really have a handle on your team, a true team president who's got a hold of the franchise and holds people accountable, that stuff in patch.com doesn't happen. Or if you do have one rogue reporter who's got wrong information, that you know as a leader and as a president of a team how to shut her down and how to tell everyone this, it's not true. And here's what is true. So
yeah, it was.
That's why I'm excited. You've got a totally blank slate. You've got a blank slate with the general manager and coach. Blank slate with the new team president. What are they going to do in Arlington Heights? You mentioned the stadium too, Meller. I was telling Waddle this. I know some people are going to say that when we find out the plans, Sylvie, you just want it all. You're never happy. Yes, I do. When the Cowboys built a stadium, and I was just telling you how popular the Bears are, everyone said, "Wow. Look at what the Cowboys built. That's state of the art." When the Rams built the stadium, everyone recently just said, "Wow, look at what the Rams built. That's state of the art." Why can't the Bears have that? Why should the Bears just build a little above average stadium just because it's better than the old Soldier Field? I don't want a roof. I want a retractable roof. If Milwaukee has it for baseball and Indy has it for football, why can't the Chicago freaking Bears build it when they're building a new stadium in 2022?
It's a fair request.
It's a fair request. Be ahead of the game. Build something state of the art. Don't tell me, well, it was too expensive or it would have been too this or too that. You hope to do this one time in the next half century. Do it right the first time, and you may not have to do it for years and years and years.
No, and what's, I mean, I haven't looked and dug into the numbers, but adding a retractable dome is not as insanely as expensive as you might think when you're already doling out a huge portion of billions of dollars to this entertainment area that you're likely going to spend. What's it going to be, an extra 5, 10% to have the retractable dome? It would stand to reason, Tyler, that that's something that you would want to have access
to. Yeah, it's like, it's when people talk about the wealth of billionaires, it's like, okay, like what's the difference between having $1 billion and $2 billion? Like, at a certain threshold, money just doesn't mean anything anymore.
Right.
And that's the point that you're getting at with this.
Right. Yeah. If you're spending this much money, go the extra distance. Like, again, look at what the Sox built before Camden. We hear all the time, they didn't position it in the right way. It doesn't face the skyline. How many years after they built it did they have to knock off the back eight rows of the upper deck because they were too high and too steep? You had an opportunity to build something that could have been perfect, that you wouldn't have to touch for years, but they didn't go those extra miles to do it. The Bears, I hope, do it. And so we will see. 312-332-3776. Also, did you guys read the Weederer article? Because I had one prevailing thought. One overwhelming thought. There were many good things from it, like Justin said. And it's a feature on Justin Fields. But I texted Dan, and I said to Dan, in my opinion, it was as much of a feature on Luke Getsy as it was Justin Fields. And maybe even more so, I feel like I got to know Luke Getsy even more than I did about Justin Fields. I feel Luke Getsy opens up a little bit more. He's no nonsense as well. Like, I feel like Justin sometimes doesn't let everybody in, and that's fine. Just win, baby. I don't care about that. But Luke Getsy, as Waddle has put it, is, as of this season, Poles will be the most important person going forward. But in this season, next to Fields, Luke Getsy is the most important person in that building.
I completely agree. And to your point about Justin Fields, we'll play some sound here, but hearing him, he's very, you know, businesslike. That no nonsense from Justin Fields. And I'm sure that's part of, he just wants to go out there and have success, because I'm hoping that with a little bit of success will come a little bit more personality from Justin Fields. But he's definitely no nonsense at the podium right now. And he he wants to do his job. He's up there, he's answering the questions, but he's not giving you a lot of insight, because it seems like he wants to move on and get on the field and actually, to your point, put all the stuff that we have very little memory of, Sylvie, because it was so forgettable last year, he wants to put that in the past and move forward and put, I think, good games together so that we can have something to get excited about.
Right. And Getsy, again, is some of the stuff that he says makes sense. The process, never getting too caught in the moment about it being a turning point in a preseason game. Getsy's like, turning point? That's dramatic. You know, we want to continue to build what we have going. We haven't played a regular season game yet. Braxton Jones hasn't blocked a regular season down yet. I like what Luke Getsy's building. And hopefully, again, like we talk about all these things we've never had. We've never had a 30 touchdown season from a quarterback. We've never had a 4,000 yard touchdown season from a quarterback. We've never had a quarterback or a offensive coordinator that we truly love. And we're like, you know what? This guy gives us an advantage. And hopefully Luke Getsy's that guy.
Doesn't it seem like he has Packer expectations too? Like the second guessing of Fields saying it's a turning point. He's got big boy expectations for this team. And I like that out of an offensive coordinator. And I kind of took the same thing away as you did, Sylvie. It felt like this was a split feature between Getsy and Fields. Like Fields is the headline, but Getsy is just as important for this team.
And Justin Fields being a young player in this league is a product of his environment. I suspect that part of the reason he said that this is a turning point was because he had success. And you know what? He frequently heard Matt Nagy last year try and spin everything in a positive light, right? The truth is, you don't need to be positive based on one preseason performance. The truth is, but I think that truly was the fact that Matt Nagy was his coach last year. Matt Nagy fighting for his job constantly felt like he had to tell you what was right about what was being done. And it didn't feel like last year, every time there was the most infantile amount of success, Matt Nagy would spin it and tell us this was it. They were, you know, collaborative effort. They're moving in the right direction. It always felt like Matt Nagy was selling you the goods. And I think that probably seeped into Justin Fields, you know, meeting with the media and how he interacts.
Sure.
I think, but like you said, Luke Getsy squashing that, and even Ryan Poles saying, you know, let's not put too much stock into what happened in preseason. It's only preseason. I think that's a good way of approaching it going forward, not to get too high based on one preseason game.
I thought they arrived in the Pittsburgh game. I thought that was Justin Fields' arrival.
For sure.
And then, of course, he got hurt in the very next game against Baltimore. I like what Justin Fields said in the article, that he wants to be coached, like that guys have been too easy. He brought back, believe it or not, an Ohio State reference that his quarterback coach at Ohio State was too easy on him. He wants to be pushed. He doesn't take it personally. He wants to be taught. There was a thing, too, where he relays to Cole Kmet, where on the touchdown to Cole Kmet the other day, where he was wide open in the end zone, he said he would have found him earlier and the play would have looked even better if Cole Kmet would have run his route differently. And he said, look, it was a touchdown. I felt guilty going up to Cole Kmet and telling him I want it done differently, but I still did it. And I thought that was there was some good stuff I read today from Justin Fields and Luke Getsy, and I'm hopeful from it.
And I think Kurt Warner also mentioned that same thing with the Cole Kmet route. And on the point of being coached, too, one thing that I've noticed in the preseason of Justin accepting coaching, too, I think he's drawn two or three offsides or neutral zone infractions. And that, I think, is a direct relay from Luke Getsy coaching Aaron Rodgers. And that's something that Aaron Rodgers is so good at. And I think that Luke Getsy is sort of imparting that on Justin Fields, too.
And Justin Fields pointing that out to Cole Kmet. Michael Pittman in Indianapolis has talked how their preseason this year has been different because Matt Ryan has been a coach on the field, so much different than Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
Matt Ryan's telling everybody in the Colts offense where they need to be so that he can get them the ball and distribute it. To that point, what you just said about Justin Fields pointing out to Cole Kmet, hey, it was a successful play, but it could have been even better. That's what you need from your quarterback, because ultimately he's the conductor of the offense. And if it's going to go well, you need him to be the leader. And that's why I said the other day to Waddle, listen, it would be disappointing if Justin Fields was not named a captain for me like he was today. And it's encouraging that he is, because that's the bare minimum. As a quarterback, it identifies a bigger issue if he's not named a team captain.
It's like, yeah, right. You're already assumed to be the captain. Like,
yes.
You better be the captain as the quarterback. Again, so Justin Fields was named captain today. We'll play you some of the sound from Eberflus and Fields. 312-332-3776. Want to tell you again about where we're going to be on Friday. It's Binney's Beverage Depot. Going to be a great time. Waddle and I will both be there. We're going to be joined by the Connie's Frozen Pizza Truck. It's all brought to you by Miller Lite. Going to have a big cash bar there. There's a big screen television. Beautiful room with lazy boys and couches and plenty of seating area. It is such a great place to see the show, take pictures, talk to us during the breaks. We're going to give away opening day tickets as well. One lucky fan will walk away with a pair of tickets against the 49ers, courtesy of Miller Lite. Got to be present to win. So again, that's this Friday, Lincoln Park, Binney's Beverage Depot, 1720 North Marcy Street.
Miss a show? All your faves ready and waiting on the ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
We will continue to talk some Bears. 312-332-3776 in the NFL. Right now, as we're in for Carmen Yurko, normally at this time, we usually crosstalk with them at 2. Everything's been pushed up today because of White Sox baseball. 2:30 for this guy who's joining me in studio right now in the old National Bank studio, Connor McKnight. 2:30 for his pregame, Sox and Mariners. So that's why everything was bumped up. Carmen and Yurko were on 10 to noon. Their podcast is available if you're looking for them. And we're on for another hour. Connor, what is up?
What's up? So I feel like during this point of the day, this computer over here to my right just automatically starts playing Croatian soccer highlights.
Well, you're lucky if you're getting sports on that.
The autoplay is on.
Yeah, it's on the Luka Modric timer.
That's right.
You
That's
are
right.
correct.
Thank you. All right.
Maybe that is. Ivan Perisic.
He looks great. He looks absolutely fantastic. A real striker? That's a thing in soccer? Right?
Have you ever seen when he puts up, like, he'll show you all the mallards of the world?
No, not mallards.
And he'll educate me on just random stuff that only the good kid worries about.
My favorite is I did during last offseason. I was in for a week with Cap, I think, and that was when before the shows moved around.
Right.
So Yurk is sitting next to me.
That was your like initiation.
No, my initiation was
or was that your hell
you?
Week?
No, well, yeah, well, that was like the
hell week is of the week with Cap.
That's right. No, so I was over there, and Yurk was he was going to play golf somewhere out west or whatever, and just apropos of nothing, without warning me at all, he was just pulling up Google Maps and showing me how he was going to get from the hotel to the golf course. And I was like, I take the left out of here. A lot of people take the right and get on, you know, Highway 5 or whatever. I'm going to take the left and cut through the back roads. That's how you do it, kid. You know, that whole thing.
Yeah, he is just one of a kind.
It's beautiful.
I was teasing him today. I said, when are you going to have us back at the house? The last time I was at his house was probably like 2004.
No, really?
And then there was, Carmen and I were both there, and he took us on the tour of the house. Like, when is it proper to give the tour of the entire house?
Right.
Including the master bedroom. And he gave us the tour of his closets. And he showed us his suits from Green Bay.
Wow.
And he says, I'm keeping these suits. They're out of style now, but everything comes back. And one day they're going to be in style, and I'm going to have them right here.
And now they are. Now we wear gigantic suits again. It's like the 90s with the big pockets and the giant pants.
Are we back to the big suits again?
Man, the kids out here are wearing pants that are just like JNCOs that I wore in high school.
Really?
Right? I mean, these enormous. Yeah, I don't understand style anymore. The T-shirts have to be gigantic, and they have to have the airbrushed. You know how, like, you would walk around in the mid-2000s, and you would see someone in the mall, like, you know, because we were still going to malls in the mid-2000s, with the wolves howling at the moon, you know, like the airbrush shirt, like Zach Galifianakis is wearing in The Hangover, right?
Right.
These are cool now. Like, these are mainstream. They're not even ironically cool anymore. They're legit cool, and I don't understand.
It was the first thing my wife did when we first started dating was going, your jeans are too baggy. Your shirts are too baggy. Nothing fits you the right way. We've got to get rid of all of this, and we've got to get shirts that fit you. And now we're back to going to baggy, though.
Apparently we are. Well, there's a cutoff point at some level, right? Because there's like baseball beat reporter dress, which is just like whatever you have found in your closet that doesn't smell like yesterday's ballpark, but kind of does, and it's on its way.
You don't consider yourself in that, though, do you?
I'm like right in the middle of that age group. Like, because now...
Look at you, got style.
I'm on the broad... Well, right, but I've also... But my wife has also addressed my fit, you know, like the kit that you wear every day, right? You gotta slim these up here. You gotta tighten around the calves there. This
right,
whole thing,
right.
You know?
The jeans. I used to wear the real baggy
enormous,
jeans.
Just enormous. With the boot cut.
Wide open.
Boot cut was
or was
thing?
The boot cut closer?
No, the boot cut was like the wide open.
Right.
You would almost step on it. So it would create the fringe. Talking 2002, man. TRL,
for
baby.
For sure. Connor McKnight is brought to you by HawkAuto.com. Ford, Chevy, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, Subaru, Cadillac, Mazda, and VW. All in one place. HawkAuto.com, where Chicagoland saves big. So last night was, again, one of those games where, you know, they got a great pitching performance from Cueto. You think they're starting to score some runs, and yesterday it got shut off again.
Yeah, you know what? I feel like yesterday, they got beat yesterday. They got beat. Logan Gilbert was really, really good. Matt Brash is a kid, a young rookie that was in the rotation when they faced him the first time. If I'm not mistaken, he made his MLB debut against the White Sox. He was terrific. He's got nasty stuff. Anthony Munoz throws a billion miles an hour, right-hander with a good slider, and that's kind of kryptonite to this White Sox lineup at times. Regardless of the run you get on, right, and hopefully the White Sox are on that run, you are going to get beat some nights. The White Sox got beat last night. Renaldo Lopez has not allowed a home run all year up until last night.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of one of those things. On the other hand, you don't need the mistakes. You don't need to be given 90 feet away, whether it's the pass ball or the ball that got away from Yoan Moncada coming in from right field from Gavin Sheets. You don't need those. But the White Sox do still kind of have that, I don't know, that bubbly kind of energy, that thing that's different now than it has been in the past. And, you know, whether that's them looking at the calendar and knowing there are only so many of these left, knowing that there's a game against Cleveland coming up here in just a little bit, plus that series out in Cleveland as well, 6 of the final 9 against the Minnesota Twins. I'm not convinced that any one of these three teams, still, any one of these three teams is capable of getting on a true, you know, a run and putting this thing away in the next week and a half. I just don't see that happening.
Did they take away the error from Sheets on the play with Moncada at third? Because they were talking about that on TV, that Sheets was tagged with that error. Yeah. And that really, that ticked me off. It's like,
you know, I'm not an error. I think we should get rid of errors. I really do.
Really?
I think we should get rid of errors. I think we should use the vast analytical means that we have to assess people playing defense. Because if the rule is, well, that error has to go to someone, and you can't assume that he receives that throw, it just has to be a better throw, then that's a dumb rule.
He was throwing from 250 feet away.
And he two-hopped it to the bag.
Yeah, and like Moncada, if he like just doesn't olay it, and if he acts like he cares... The ball doesn't know the fly ball on the next at bat that would have driven in the run anyway, right?
Yeah,
that would have been
it becomes an earned run on right, Johnny's tab.
But still, it just is. It leaves this bad taste in your mouth when you see crap like that.
I agree that it was a mistake that they can't. And DJ talked about it too during the broadcast.
Yeah.
Right? You can't have that happen. It is still an error on Gavin Sheets, his fourth of the year.
That ticks me off.
If you take away errors, though, Connor, what are you going to do about no hitters potentially? You know, having a no-hitter with an error in the game.
That's a fair point. I guess it's a larger kind of like, I don't like errors in the way we do it. You probably can't get rid of the individual error. I just don't think it should be a measure of... I don't think it should be the measure of fielding percentage. You know what I mean? Like, I think we got better ways of evaluating whether a player is good defensively or not. It's a fair point on the no-hitter thing. I stand corrected.
Do we know at all what the status for Luis Robert is as far as... he got hit now yesterday.
He did,
After the bad wrist,
mm-hmm.
and now he gets hit. And comes back from paternity. He had paternity leave too, right?
That's right.
I mean, like he's missed games for so many different reasons. What's his deal?
Yesterday was his first start since August 25th with the sprained left wrist. He was diving in it, and that's the thing too. I'm getting a little tired of people looking at Luis Robert or other players like him and saying, you got to play. What are you soft? You got to go play. Then he's out there, busting it, playing through pain to try and be there for his team. And now we're shrugging our shoulder. Oh, what are you doing? You can't be out there. I don't think we can have it both ways there.
You can't.
I think you got to choose one way or the other.
What's the right way?
So I think Luis is trying to clearly play through pain at this point. You know, he's day-to-day after being hit with the fastball last night on the inside pitch off the left hand, the left fingers, and that's bruised. He's not in the lineup today. It sounds like it's day-to-day. Now, the way I look at it for Luis is, especially with the swings, I'm talking August 25th against the Orioles. That's Felix Bautista with 102 inside. The left hand's barely even on the bat coming through. That player needs to be protected from himself. And that's what the White Sox did after that. He stopped playing. Why they didn't use the injured list is a White Sox decision. The roster's expanded after that. They felt they had it covered. He was going to the paternity list. And apparently this wrist issue that he has isn't one that can be made worse. It can only just kind of stay there and be sore. So it's kind of been a tough play. Yeah, I think you have to. This pain, though, is very specifically located to a point where you cannot do your job up there swinging the bat against 96, 97, God forbid 102, right? So we are in a bit of a sticky situation. And a good Luis Robert is potentially a difference maker, especially last night in a game where you're looking for just a couple more hits to play in a very tight ball game.
I mean, he's arguably your most talented right on paper. Is he your most talented player?
I think you can make that argument. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's between Robert and Abreu and probably Tim Anderson at this point.
Right.
But, you know, Abreu is 35 going on 36 and has not hit the home runs that he has in the past. Still an incredibly valuable player. Tim Anderson is that guy. He's not there right now. And Luis
Robert, do we have an update on TA?
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be about a week before he begins swinging again, which starts to, and they haven't said anything officially yet, but if that's kind of, and James Fegan was reporting this, I want to make sure I source it correctly.
Yeah, it's good.
Fegan had this, and it sounds like it's about a week or so before he starts swinging again, maybe on the longer side of the week. And that, you would think, maybe starts to put it more than 6 weeks. Still possible, but maybe more than 6 weeks. Remember, that 6 weeks original timeline puts it right around the 20th, 21st, 22nd. That's a series against the Guardians. That's when the White Sox are home against Cleveland. So it would be big to return Tim Anderson to form against that Guardians team.
How many games against the Guardians left?
There are four left against the Guardians,
okay.
One a makeup, and then three here at Guaranteed Rate Field. and there are six of the final nine against the Minnesota Twins.
And what is the Guardians? Have you looked at the Guardians' schedule as far as like what
I have? I can bring it up in front of me too, so I don't get it wrong.
They have the silly part where they actually end the season with six straight against the Royals.
Yes, they
because their very first series at the beginning of the year got bumped all the way to the back. It happened to be Royals, so that's not good for the White Sox.
Not great. Oh, on the other hand, you can cut it the other way and go, well, the Royals are also playing six rookies who don't know any better and haven't been up here the entire season, so maybe MJ Melendez is still fresh and hitting dingers. You know?
That would be, I wouldn't say that's glass half full. That's like glass a quarter full
way of glass, looking at things. There, water. Put it.
The Royals have had, the Royals won the series against the Sox, right? Is that they, 2 years in a row that they won that?
It's not. Is that final between the White Sox and Royals? Yeah, I suppose it is. They did win that series this year, 10-9. They won last year, 10-9. To answer the first question, the Guardians are playing the Royals today. They have the off day tomorrow, three against the Twins this weekend.
Okay, that would be good.
They get the Angels. They have a five. This is part of that wacky stuff, too, right? They're at home for three against the Angels. They have that one off against the White Sox. That's next Thursday. Then they are playing five in 4 days against the Twins. So if you want to tell me that the Guardians are running away with this division,
right?
Cool.
A lot of beating up each other.
There's five games in 4 days. I mean, the Guardians' schedule throughout September is just a ton of baseball. It's just so much baseball.
A lot of pitchers you have to use. Speaking of that, Kopech back today?
Kopech is making the start today, probably on a pitch count. We'll see just how long he's able to go. He's another guy, you know, trying to work through pain, trying to pitch through just a little bit extra to get himself there. If you're... Not to plug the podcast or anything, but if you're into the whole... We talked with Michael Kopech 2 weeks ago on White Sox Weekly, and we talked about what it is to, you know, identify, okay, the knee thing that he had against Texas in the middle of the season. Am I pitching through pain? Is this something that I can deal with for my teammates, for the better of the team? Or is this something that's going to preclude me from doing the job well enough to win today? And I think it's, you know, you listen back to that interview, especially now that we've had that next, you know, hamstring injury for Kopech. You really do hear a guy who is battling is probably not the right word, but learning that line, kind of like Chris Sale did years ago when he was dealing with some of that elbow barking and the White Sox. Well, maybe we'll move you into the bullpen. And Chris walked into Kenny Williams' office and said, listen, man, I am a starter. And Kenny has praised, you know, Chris Sale for doing that and putting himself in that position. So I think this is not uncommon to see, you know, young pitchers, especially who've taken uncommon paths to starting in the bigs like Kopech did and Sale a little bit before him, different ways, but, you know, weird paths, to advocate for themselves and to try and push a little bit.
That was the one confrontation that was applauded.
Yes.
There were others that were not so much.
Others with scissors and or knives less so. Yes, that were not so applauded.
All right. And anything on La Russa? He said with Cap that he's hoping to come. I mean, through his spokesperson, of course.
That is the expectation. You know, I as I understand, Tony La Russa is the manager of the White Sox, and you know he wants to manage the White Sox. That's the understanding of it. I get. You know, I'm flying out to Oakland tomorrow to do games on Friday and Saturday, and for Len, I'm looking forward to being with the team and kind of, you know, being. I mean, you know how it is having covered a team. If you're there, you know a little bit more than when you're not, and I'm looking to do a little recon over the weekend.
Going to be looking for sex in the upper deck? Not you personally. I know.
I'm sorry, did you say sex in the upper deck?
I am a married man.
Not
you personally. Are you going to be like binoculars looking to see if anyone's having sex in the section?
Is that Oakland? Is that Oakland and Toronto?
Yes.
Toronto's got the hotel, man, and that's, I mean, you booked
no,
the
this wasn't in the Toronto.
Out in the open, yeah. Boy, as a guy who covers baseball, I feel like this is a glaring hole.
I did see the thing in, are we not doing phrasing anymore? I did see the thing in Toronto up in the stands. It's just that when you're, When it pops up and it gets sent to you on the group chat while you're doing a game,
that's interesting.
You can't really look at it. You know, it's like, hey, DJ, check this out. And he's like, listen, kid, just do the baseball game. You're barely hanging on.
Will wait till the commercial breaks before we start peppering you with videos from sex in the stands at Oakland.
I hope
this
it's of sex and not from sex. I mean, that's either way we need to do it. That works for me.
Our text chat, though, has got to be muted when you're doing a game. We may be muted anyway, we muted during
I'll peel the veil back. I have all the reads that we have, right? I have it on an Apple Notes thing, so I can just click the boxes and go through. The iPad took a dive, and that's what I'd been using. and I usually flip the phone over, you know, because I'm a new play-by-play guy. I don't want to be inundated with text messages. I like the no distractions approach. But the iPad died, Sylvie, so now I have to use the phone. So these all your texts are popping up over and over, and so many pictures of the pantless
totally
Pete Rose. It's just, my word.
Connor McKnight has left the chat.
It's just, there's so many pictures of Pete Rose not wearing pants in this text thread. And it's just like at a point you need to talk to your guy.
Waddle would argue there's not enough, Connor.
You know? And here's the other thing. Like so many, now he's like going through filters. It's like the same picture, but it's like, oh, Juno. I'll use the Juno filter and send it to the text thread now.
Why does Pete Rose have whiskers and cat ears? This is weird.
It's a weird use of a Snapchat filter,
That's
man. But
fantastic.
I guess it means he's figuring out technology, and we should be happy for him.
We should be. Yes, it's a big win. Not so much you. All right, Connor. Thank you. We'll be listening at 2:30. There you go. Connor McKnight's all over White Sox baseball. If you want to talk some Bears, I got an interesting ways you watch your football other than Bears on a football weekend. We'll discuss that coming up next.
Live from State Street and the Old National Bank Studio, this is Waddle and Sylvie. See them on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Or listen to the ESPN Chicago app, ESPN 1000 and 100.3 HD2.
This is WMVP, WSHE HD2 Chicago.
A Good Karma Brands radio station.
Here's a question I want to discuss in the 2 o'clock hour before White Sox baseball game. You could vote on my Twitter handle, at Waddle and Sylvie. It's brought to you by your local Chicagoland Toyota dealers. Check them out at Drive Toyota. Besides watching your team, so if you're a Bears fan, besides watching the Bears, if you're a Packers fan, besides watching the Packers, so besides watching your favorite NFL team, what is the best thing about an NFL weekend? And I gave you three options and then other. Let me know what other would be, because other is getting 10% of the vote right now. I gave you fantasy football, gave you gambling, and I gave you the Red Zone channel. You know, watching other games and the Red Zone. I can't wait for the Red Zone. That's where I voted, because I'm not that good at gambling, and I'm not that good at fantasy football. I am good at watching the Red Zone channel. I'm very good at that. My kids are now of the age where they're going to be very excited to watch the Red Zone. They like the quick pace. It's the YouTube generation.
Of course, but it's going to break their ability to comprehend a full game and the action. But I don't think there's anything you do. You can't fight it, because it's a better product for the consumer is to watch multiple games happen at once.
And then they learn the league, though. While they may not know the context of a full game, here's Patrick Mahomes. You know, here's Lamar Jackson. Here's Tom Brady across the country. It's the best.
Oh, it is. But I will say, I do feel it goes hand in hand with gambling and fantasy. Like,
it's a necessary tool.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're all related in some way.
This is true. Yeah. You become a better fantasy player or a better gambler by watching the Red Zone and consuming the product of other teams, not just checking scores from time to time.
All right, so if you want to weigh in, I'll give you the results coming up next. I want to hear Meller and Tyler what their favorite thing is. Why are 10% of the people voting other? What is that other? What is your favorite, other than watching your favorite football team, what's the best thing about an NFL weekend? 312-332-3776.